Hey, good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Just for our listeners, take us back to 2003, October 14th. It was the Chicago Cubs taking on the Florida Marlins. This was for the National League pennant and a place in the World Series.
Yeah, so the Cubs were 5 outs away from going to their first World Series since 1945. They were winning the game. You know, I don't remember the exact score, but they were up by 5 or 6 runs. And 5 outs away, foul ball goes into the left field corner. The left fielder comes over to try to catch it. And a fan interfered with his attempt to catch the ball. The player did not catch the ball. The ball fell on the ground. And from there, the entire inning unraveled for Cubs fans. They went on to lose that game, came back the next night in Game 7, do or die, and lost again to the team that eventually won the World Series, the Florida Marlins. And for long-suffering Cubs fans who had not, you know, won the World Series since 1908, and like I said, hadn't been there since 1945, it was just the latest in a long line of gut punches as to how the Cubs had figured out a way to, disappoint their fans yet again.
The fan that supposedly interfered with play was a gentleman by the name of Steve Bartman, a longtime Cubs fan, 26 years of age at the time. And after the Cubs ended up losing that series against Florida, the fans took their frustration out on him, and he was ultimately blamed for the loss. And the consequences would go well beyond the days following, but would endure right up until last year. He would become the most infamous fan in all of sport.
He became the scapegoat, as wildly unfair as it was. The outfielder who did not make a play, a gentleman by the name of Moises Alou, slammed his glove on his leg, pointed to Steve Bartman, and kind of let the whole stadium and everybody watching at home know, hey, I would have caught that ball if not for him. And through the course of the next, 30 minutes or so, as the game continued to unravel, the Florida Marlins kept scoring more runs, you could tell the Cubs were going to lose more and more fans, both inside the stadium and out, began to turn on Steve Bartman. He had to be ushered out of the stadium in disguise. He was hidden that night, at least for a little while, at an usher's apartment near the stadium. The friends he was with that night ditched him, basically. And from that point on, he basically went into hiding. He issued a statement the next morning apologizing and saying that, he did what any Cubs fan would do, and he spoke to how much he loved the Cubs. But other than that statement, he went into hiding, and nobody really knew what happened to him.
I also understand that such was the disappointment that the particular ball that Steve Bartman interfered with was later auctioned. It was bought by a local restaurant who then went out in February the following year and publicly detonated it by special effects experts by the name of Michael Lanteri. Parts of the ball are now in museums. Parts of the ball are actually used in a pasta sauce recipe. I mean, it was just simply extraordinary.
Exactly. No, it became this huge ordeal where, the gentleman who bought the ball, and as you said, he blew it up one day in his way of ending the curse. I went about a year later and did a story that I went and found Steve Bartman at his place of work and tried to talk to him and get an interview, and he became kind of this mystic figure in a way because he didn't come forward, because he didn't, sign up for any commercials or endorsements or do any interviews. He kind of just sort of, went into hiding, like I said. And so that became, part of the mystery, part of the story in a way.
You, Wayne, appear in the ESPN documentary 30 for 30, Catching Hell, and it is video footage of you approaching Steve Bartman the following year at his workplace premises. What was he like in real life? What was his demeanor like?
Yeah, well, understanding that I was waiting in a parking lot where he worked, and he came out of the office at, 6, 7 o'clock on a Friday night, and, I jump out of my car and introduce myself and hand him a card and ask for an interview. It's not the the best way to catch somebody. But, you know, no one had any success, you know, speaking to Steve otherwise. And, you know, he was fine, you know, considering the situation. He was friendly. He was accommodating. He did say to me, you know, for future reference, it might not be the best approach to ask for an interview in a parking lot jumping out of a car. But look, I understood that. You know, the one thing that I remember is I remember thinking to myself, you know, people in Chicago and people in the United States had a very particular image of Steve and what he looked like and who he was. And he wore a sweatshirt that night and had headphones on through the game and an old kind of Cubs hat. And when I saw him, he was in, you know, khakis and a polo and was going to work, right? And I remember thinking to myself, if I didn't know who I was looking for, I wouldn't have recognized it. And so that was the thing that stood out to me, was just that he wasn't in disguise, but he just didn't look like a gentleman who was, you know, in the stands that night.
One thing that Steve Bartman didn't do was cash in on his infamy. He didn't sue the Chicago Cubs. He didn't sue Fox Television, who probably had a huge influence on the way he was portrayed. And he certainly didn't go on the speaking circuit or sign potential endorsement deals and built a brand around being the most hated fan in all of sport. He wasn't remotely interested. Why was that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the way Steve and his family have looked at this all along has basically been, you know, he was a fan that had bad luck. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And his action was something that most baseball fans probably would have replicated. And, you know, the reality is they believed that everybody should have, you know, ignored it, turned away, and it wasn't a story. But the reality is that's just simply not true. Just because we don't intend to, cause an error or make a mistake doesn't mean that it isn't newsworthy. Certainly, you know, I put a lot of the blame on that outfielder and the way he reacted in throwing that spotlight and throwing that attention on Steve. But even so, I mean, you know, the Cubs fans, that's just kind of their natural reaction, I think, and as unfair as it is. And I think that Steve's, you know, take was, look, if I'm not going to do any interviews, if I'm not going to talk to anybody, I'm certainly not going to cash in on this, because all that does is essentially validate that I did do something wrong. By not doing those things, he's sort of saying, look, I don't know why this is all a big deal to everybody.
When all the stakeholders in and around this particular incident look back, has there ever been an apology issued by Fox Television? Have the directors, those involved in terms of the cutting to various camera shots, taken any sort of responsibility and come out and said, hey, we've got this wrong, this can never happen again?
Certainly, you know, we did at ESPN, we did one of our 30 for 30 films a few years ago about this story. And, you know, the director of the broadcast that night for Fox Sports, you know, he said, look, we may have shown it too many times. We may have focused on it too many times. But the reality is, I mean, still, that's what everyone was talking about. And so where's that fine line of how much do you show it and how much do you move on? There were reporters in Chicago the next day who sort of tracked him down and revealed his name. And that's another situation where, you know, where's the ethical standard in doing that and, you know, announcing to the public who this individual is, and then, you know, people being able to identify him. You know, the biggest change in the story, though, is for all the anger and frustration that people had with Steve that night and in the days and weeks and probably even months after, that has come full circle now. And I think most people will tell you that they're embarrassed with the way Cubs fans handled it that night. And they feel bad for him. There's a lot of sympathy for what he had to go through and the way, you know, his life was completely changed, you know, because of the landing spot of one foul ball.
You're listening to Veach on Sport. My guest is Wayne Drays from ESPN in the United States as we discuss the story of Steve Bartman arguably sport's most infamous sports fan. Wayne, several club players from the Chicago Cubs came out and defended Steve Bartman, Mark Pryor, pitcher Rick Sutcliffe. In fact, Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball at the time, said, hey, look, leave this guy alone. He wasn't the reason why Chicago ended up losing this National League pennant championship to the Florida Marlins. Other mistakes were made. When they came out and they defended Bartman, did it change at all the perception amongst the Chicago fans? Or did people just continue to see what they wanted to see and vent their frustration?
Certainly. And any Cubs fan will tell you, I mean, through the course of those next that next half hour, there was a double play that should have happened, and the Cubs shortstop dropped the ball. He was one of the best fielders the entire year. There was a situation where the manager probably should have gone out and removed the starting pitcher. And look, even after all of that, they still had a game seven that they could come back and win the next night. They were tied in that game, I want to say 3-3 early on in the game, and managed to choke that away. So absolutely 100%, the outcome of any sporting event is rarely decided on one individual play. It's a collection of plays. Having said that, this was, you know, the most interesting play that night, if you will, and that's what people chose to focus on, regardless of the fact that it wasn't, certainly it wasn't the deciding moment.
The Chicago Cubs finally won the World Series last year after 108 years, and off the back of that, it seems everybody has now moved on. They've forgiven Steve Bartman. But if they hadn't have won that World Series, would it still be the status quo? Would he still be a much maligned figure?
Yes, for sure. I mean, he was the latest chapter in a long line of, there was a black cat who ran by a player in 1969, and the Cubs collapsed. There was a ball that rolled through a first baseman's glove in 1984 that people talked about. And Bartman was just another sort of chapter in this. And certainly, until they won the World Series and that was all erased, that was part of the story. Steve Bartman and that night and that play were part of the story until they won.
This has had somewhat of a happy ending for Steve Bartman, because club owner Tom Ricketts has come out and said, hey, look, enough's enough. This guy deserves better. This guy deserves a lot more. And the club has presented him with a World Series championship ring. How well was that received in the city of Chicago? How well was that received in America? How big a story?
It was a huge story. You know, what was interesting about it is there was no advance notice. There was no rumor they were going to do this. There were a lot of people who, when the Cubs won the World Series, said, hey, they need to have a Steve Bartman day at Wrigley Field and bring him out, you know, into the pitcher's mound, let him throw the first pitch, let us all give him a standing ovation and wrap our arms around him and apologize in many ways. And I don't know how likely it was for that to happen, but the fact that they decided to give him a authentic championship ring is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, Steve put out a very, very heartfelt, sentimental statement where, you know, he thanked the Cubs and did all those things, but at the same time, he spoke a little bit about how we treat each other in this world. He touched on, you know, the media and the focus they put on him with the story. And look, like, you know, my story and the work we did at ESPN is, you know, at or near the front of that list. I get that. I think he made people think a little bit about scapegoats and when something goes wrong, you know, where you immediately decide to point the finger.
The presentation of this World Series ring to Steve Bartman, was it a public affair? Was it done privately? How was it conducted?
Yeah, it was a private presentation. We don't know many details about it at all. All we really know is there was a day where, last week the Cubs put out a release and said they did this, and there was an image of the ring with Bartman on the side, just like it would say, you know, Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant or any of the great players. It said Bartman. And then, you know, we had his statement, thanking the Cubs and asking people basically to be kinder to one another.
Are we now likely to see Steve Bartman attending baseball games, going out in public, not necessarily hiding from his true identity and just going back to normality and enjoying sport as a sports fan like he once did for so many years of his life?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's going to be anything, you know, enormously public. He's been back to Wrigley Field several times since this. I know he's been back to Wrigley Field for events even this year. And nobody's noticed, right? I mean, in this world of social media, we all have, you know, superstar cameras on our phones, in our pockets, or in our purses. There's never been a single photo of somebody saying, hey, I saw Steve Bartman. And I think that speaks to, A, how difficult he is to identify, B, the loyalty that his close friends and his family have for him, and C, the fact that he doesn't want that to happen. And so my guess is that will stay this way. I mean, that the ring and Steve's statements will be kind of the final chapter of all this, and then that's it. The book is closed, and everybody, you know, can hopefully learn some lessons from all of this.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about lessons learned. Can you see this happening again to a fan in America, or do you think that people have learnt from the Steve Bartman situation, that players have learnt from it, that we understand that this is just part of sport at times? These things are occasionally going to happen, right or wrong.
Well, you know what's interesting is, you know, the simple act of a fan looking for a foul ball or a home run. I mean, I was watching the Cubs game, I think it was last night or 2 days ago, and a fan in San Francisco reached over a wall and tried to grab a home run. That's just a natural human reaction, no matter what anybody's going to tell you. As far as the way people react, the way people scapegoat, the way people, you know, are quick to point the finger, if you will, I would love to tell you that, you know, we're going to evolve as people and learn to not do that and remind ourselves of the mistakes we've made with, you know, Steve Bartman and so many others. But truthfully, I mean, I don't know if that's the case. You know, you wonder sometimes, you know, with a lot of decisions that are being made, where we're sort of headed, you know, as a society. And so I don't know. I'd like to say yes, that people have learned their lesson and are ready to move on. But I don't know. I think it's going to pretty much be a case-by-case, you know, situation with each individual.
On a little bit more of a lighthearted note, and just switching the focus back to the Chicago Cubs team that did win the World Series in 2016, have they named streets after every player? Have they built statues and put them on every corner of Chicago just to remind themselves that the wait is over, that 108 years has gone by, and now this town are once again world champions?
Not yet. I mean, I think those things will come down the road. In terms of, you know, players, once this run is over and those players have grown up and perhaps retired, you know, depending how the rest of their careers go, you might see, you know, a statue or something that honors them. But, you know, regardless, the 25 men who were on that roster who accomplished that, something nobody had done in 108 years last November, they are forever gods in Chicago. They can walk into any bar and drink and eat like kings for free. You know, they can have all the Italian sausage they want in Chicago. You know what I mean? It's just, that's the way it'll be. And whether they were a superstar or they were a guy who came in and threw four pitches to get out one batter, it doesn't matter. They will all be very, very special in the hearts and minds of Cubs fans.
The Boston Red Sox broke their famous curse, won a World Series in 2004. Chicago Cubs winning the World Series for the first time in 108 years. Off the back of the media that has surrounded those famous victories and those famous wins, what are still some of the great sporting droughts in America? Those teams that have waited a long time to win, and everybody is now waiting for them to replicate what we've seen with the Cubs last year.
Well, there's nothing that goes back to 1908, but you know, in baseball now, the longest drought, ironically enough, is the Cleveland Indians. And that was the team the Cubs beat for the World Series last year. They've got a great team again and a very good chance of ending their own drought. Another team, you know, in football, the Cleveland Browns, is a team that have not won in a very, very long time. Have not even really been competitive for a while. So, you know, and look, these are stories that people rally around. Just like, you know, Leicester, you know, and what they did, you know, in England last year. I mean, these are stories that people get excited about. They love to see the overlooked team, the underdog, the team that hasn't done it for so long, be able to finally, you know, accomplish things like this, because That means that they were here to watch that at a special time. They were able to see something that their parents and their grandparents and maybe even their great-grandparents weren't able to see.
Wayne, people listening to this that want to follow you via social media, what's your Twitter handle?
ESPNWD is where you learn my innermost thoughts.
Well, Wayne Drais, thank you for taking the time this afternoon here on Veach on Sport, joining us on the program and sharing one of the remarkable stories in American sport, the story of sport's most infamous fan, Steve Bartman.
Thank you.